And welcome again to Reading the Brews Online Podcast. This is Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And as you Brewer fans noted, we had a very upsetting and, I guess, tough loss last night to the Royals, 2-1. Tonight's game, however, hopefully is a different story. We have Randy Wolf up against the Royals' Jonathan Sanchez. And Colin, as you and every other Brewers fan know, we need to win this game.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've had, it looked like for a little while we were turning things around. We won three straight against, you know, we finished out with two wins against the Cubs, and we won that opener against the Padres. And then it's been very up and down for the first couple weeks here. And, you know, this is the time now with the Royals, Twins, Blue Jays coming up that we can really do some damage in our division. We're still only 5.5 games back, so... I mean, we're far from out of contention, especially with an extra playoff spot this year. But, yeah, we got to make a move, and tonight could be a good night to do it.
Yeah, I mean, at one point we were actually, you know, very close behind St. Louis, you know, only a game behind them. And even still, I mean, Pittsburgh isn't second, but they were, you know, in first last year and in the top tier of the Central, and they fell. So how long are they going to stay? You know, if we can take advantage of this and get up there, we can stay up there because, you know, we're playing like this with, like, half of our team injured. We get our regular team back, we're not going anywhere.
Right, and the unfortunate fact is, you know, we're not getting the team that we started with back at any time this year with Gonzalez, Narvison, and
Gamel
being gone for the year. But, you know, they're starting to gel, the little walking wounded team we have here. They're starting to they look like they're starting to play better together. You know, it's the little pieces. It's Green and Conrad need to step it up. Kataris needs to start getting more consistent if he's going to be that bat off the bench slash, you know, platoon catcher. Yeah, and that's one thing. I know we weren't going to recap last night's game, but how do you put Brooks Conrad in a pinch hit, bottom of the ninth situation to win the game?
I don't understand that move at all. It's just he has not done well the entire season, and you expect him to do well under pressure.
Right.
He's not even batting over .1. He's batting .079. I mean, why would you put somebody in there? It's like you might as well just put a pitcher in.
Exactly, and although, you know, I don't think it's much of an argument that a lot of our pitchers can probably hit better than Brooks can right now.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I mean,
why not put Gallardo in there at that point?
Yeah, I mean, that it sounds like a joke, but it isn't. I mean, Gallardo can actually hit, so, you know, put him in there, you know, it's just...
It was just strange because you have Carlos Gomez, who's hitting over .250 right now. I mean, again, not stellar, but, I mean, he's starting to see the ball better. And you have him in as a pinch runner in a situation that ended up, you know, nothing came from it. Instead of keeping him open as a bat on the bench, it was just weird. It was just a weird ending to that game. I mean, that was the point where we could have had it, and... You know, kids, I mean, if Brooks Conrad wants to be a major leaguer, he's got to step up in situations like that. I mean, there's just no other way to say it.
I mean, yeah, if he's not going to do that, I mean, we can at least put Mason Ed in. I mean, he can at least hit. I mean, not well, but I mean, at least he can hit better than Conrad can.
Right. Well, there are only a few people that can hit really well on the Brewers, and one of them is Ryan Braun, and the other two are injured. So,
well, actually, Nori's been doing pretty well, though. He's been warming
up. Well, yeah.
So, but yeah, Ramey's been stepping it up, though, a little bit. I've noticed he's done very well, actually. He's at least been getting a hit in every game, every other game, so he's been stepping up his production. Corey Hart's been doing really well. And I thought it was odd that Renicky had him leading off last night. I really kind of... That kind of confused me a little bit, because I like Nori batting off a lot more than I do anybody else. But especially Corey Hart, that's just kind of weird.
Yeah. It was, I mean, and I know Renicky likes to fiddle with matchups and stuff like that, but at this point, when you're looking to turn things around, I think you need to go. You need to go with consistency. You know,
yeah, you need to already have this game plan and go with it. You can't just say, "Oh, well, you know, All Star Game's a month away. We're still tweaking our lineup." No, you don't have time to do that anymore, or else the season's going to be over before you realize it.
Right.
So, pitching-wise, you know, obviously he's another great start out of Greinke. Actually got his ERA below 3 this time. It's at 2.96, but not so much a great performance out of K-Rod.
No, and, you know, I won't even say it was a terrible performance. It was just, there were two mistakes that the Royals really took advantage of, you know, those two pitches to, who was it, Gordon and Butler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, even then, across the board, I mean, they only had, they had 9 hits, but, I mean, only 2 runs on the 9 hits, so they weren't really pushing a lot of balls out there.
No, it's just, you know, I don't have any ill feelings towards Greinke because, whether you want to believe it or not, he's been one of our more reliable guys in the bullpen next to Cameron Lowe this
right.
season. I mean, we put in Axer the other night, and he gave up 3 runs. I mean, there is nobody in this bullpen I would call consistent, but if there's any two pitchers I feel comfortable putting in at times, it's going to be Cameron Lowe and Greinke. There's nobody else I feel comfortable putting in.
And, well, the comfort factor, I think, comes in big when you realize that we don't have the offense right now to really feel comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, we're up.
I mean, is there ever a point in the last, you know, 3 weeks where you saw a 2-run lead or a 3-run lead and a reliever came in and you're like, okay, even if he gives up a run or 2, I know we're going to be okay. You haven't felt like that because that it simply isn't the case. You know, we have... in our lineup right now, we have Aoki threatening to hit 300, and then we have Braun just over 300, and no one else is even close.
Yeah, and I mean, you look back at that San Diego game, the last game of that series, and, you know, we were up 6-2, and we put Axford in, and he gives him 3 runs, and it's 6-5. It's a whole new ballgame at that point. San Diego is threatening to take over the lead. And we saw that back in April. With this very same situation, it was against the Astros, but this time it was Varus that did it, and he gave it 3 runs, and it was a 6-5 game. We ended up winning that. But, I mean, you should be comfortable with a 6-2 lead. But
oh, absolutely.
But the way the Brewers have been this year, I'm not comfortable with a 10-run lead. And I'm not, you know, saying that to be funny. I'm saying that to be serious, because we don't expect guys to go in there and give up 3 runs, especially if they're the closer. I know Axford has struggled this year, but that's... I mean, he gave up 3 hits in that game, walked 2, gave up 3 earned runs. It's just, he only lasted for a third of an inning.
Well, the thing that's funny is Axford's been, in my mind, very consistent when he gets a save opportunity. When he... you know, in the game that I went to on Thursday, the Cubs game, he pitched... He pitched brilliantly then in a tie game, but when he comes in non-save situations, it seems
kind of hopeless.
like he doesn't have the same mentality when he goes in for a hold or when he goes in for, you know, just to get his reps in.
You know, and that's why I said early in the season, and I still will agree to this, is the fact that I think in some cases we need to have somebody else close out. Maybe Greinke. He used to be a closer. So, you know, a lot of Brewers fans, you know, will probably want my address and hunt me down for saying that. But, I mean, at this point, do you really want Axford closing out games who can only pitch and save opportunities? And even then, he's given up runs. You know, okay, say the Brewers, and this is hypothetical, their next 6 games they win by 4 runs or more. Axford's mm-hmm. not needed at that point, so Renicki's going to stick him in there somewhere to, you know, warm up his arm, you know, to pitch, to get used to, you know, playing. But, you know, obviously, like you said, he can't pitch when it's not a save opportunity, so he's going to give up 2 or 3 runs. So you need somebody else in that role for a while. We've seen other teams do this. We saw Miami do it with Heath Bell. You know, we've seen, well, even Kansas City, you know, they went between, you know, a combination of Aaron Crow and Joachim Soria and now Jonathan Broxton. So,
right.
I mean, it's been very interesting, you know, to see when teams do that because it does help their closer get back into, you know, the mentality that I can pitch, I can get these outs, and even when I don't need the save, I can still help my team win.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see that happen soon. Frankie's getting more and more vocal about the fact that he wants to close out games for Milwaukee. In my mind, if I can't trust him if I can't trust him with one run in the eighth inning, I'm not sure if I can trust him anymore, you know, than someone who has proven to be extremely consistent saving in Axford. But then again, I mean, it's kind of a decent problem to have when you think about it, to have two pitchers at the end of games that, I mean, we're talking a lot of negatives about the two of these, but, I mean, let's be honest, these are two elite relief pitchers that any team in the league would be just drooling over.
Yeah, it's very fortunate to have both of them. And, you know, I'm not, you know, getting down on Axford or Frankie, you know, saying all these negatives about them because they're bad pitchers. They're very good pitchers. You know that, I know that, every Brewers fan knows that. But the fact that they're struggling is no surprise, and it's a lot more apparent when pitchers struggle. So,
right.
It's just...
Yeah, it's very lonely out on that mound.
Yeah, so, you know, hopefully it's just a temporary funk they're in right now and they can rebound from it. Because, you know, if, you know, Braun was in a slump, I mean, obviously we would notice that because he's the only guy doing anything. But,
right.
You know, if any, if, you know, like, Nori was in a slump or Corey Hart was in a slump, you know, oh, let's say, oh, they'll break out of that. Pitchers, it's like they only have that one shot to prove themselves. And then they're not called on for the next four games. You know, so it's a lot different for a pitcher's perspective, but at the same time, we know that they're good pitchers, so maybe just for right now, we need to suck that up and just hope we can get some more wins. But losing to teams we should be beating is not helping our case at all.
Right. Speaking of pitching, tonight's pitching matchup is... I mean, on paper, it looks like a win for Milwaukee. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
Randy Wolf's last couple starts have been just great. I mean, he got hung with a loss on one of them, but he had a great outing with wonderful command of all his pitches against the Cubs. He seems like he's really settling in and becoming the kind of veteran pitcher that we need on this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, we've had, you know, Greinke turning around. Gallardo's been there, he's been not there. Fires, I still believe in. And
Fires is potential coming out of his ears there. He's gonna be something, I think.
You know, and Wolf, we needed him to turn it around. You know, he had a very bad outing against Pittsburgh, but, you know, he's had bad outings against Pittsburgh and Houston in his past 10 games. But, I mean, other than that, he's been fairly consistent, you know. Lost a game, you know, against San Francisco where he gave up four runs. But, I mean, four runs is kind of a huge deficit with the way our offense has been. But, I mean, other than that, he's pitched in games that he should have gotten decisions in. Like you said, the last outing against the Cubs, you know, the outing against the Diamondbacks, he only gave up two runs. And even his one outing on the 21st against the Giants, he went seven innings. And that's kind of rare to see that out of Randy Wolf.
Yeah, absolutely. He's had a couple long starts, which is good to see, especially, you know, considering his age and the fact that he doesn't have... I don't know how to put it exactly, because he has good pitches, but, you know, it's nothing like stellar or mind-blowing when he's on the mound. You know, he's very methodical. He works batters, and, you know, to see him go seven innings a couple times is... It's promising for a team that really needs it.
Yeah, and on the opposite side of that, you know, Jonathan Sanchez just came off the DL. He hasn't done very well when he has pitched. You know, his last outing was against Boston on May 7th. He lasted only three innings, getting up six earned runs. And, you know, he was very good with the Giants last year. And then ever since he went to the Royals, you know, obviously with the injury, and he hasn't been very good. So, you know, with the way the Brewers have been playing, there really is no reason to say that we can't win this game.
Right. You would hope that it would be enough. And, you know, a lot of the Brewers have done fairly well against him. Ryan Braun has hit very well. Carlos Gomez has been decent against him. And interestingly enough, Brooks Conrad has a .500 average against Jonathan Sanchez.
What's that, one for two?
500% better. Yes, that's exactly what it is, actually. But that's still like 1,000 times better than he's hitting against anyone else.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Mom, I'm hitting 500 against this guy. Oh, would you get one hit off of him?
So,
that's interesting. And then tomorrow's matchup, which closes out the series, will feature Sean Markingham against Luke Hockevere. And that, yet again, another game I think we should win. Markham's been fairly consistent as well, and I really have no complaints about how the way he's pitched. So I really think that's a game we should win as well. And then this weekend we play Minnesota at Minnesota. You know, one of the AL's worst teams, one of baseball's worst teams. And in those matchups, we'll see Fiers versus Liriano, Giovanni Iardo versus Hendricks, and then Zach Greinke versus Nick Blackburn. So
those are three really fun pitching matchups.
Yeah, I especially like Fiers versus Liriano.
Yeah,
because Liriano, you know, was like, oh, he's so good, and then, you know, this season he's 1-7 with a 6.45 ERA and not good.
Right. Right. I mean, despite the fact that the Twins are just absolutely dismal, I always feel like the Twins-Brewers series are really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, we played, you know, them earlier and should have won that series and we didn't, but, you know, this time, it's kind of a whole new ballgame, not to be a cliche. And I don't think, you know, Michael Fiers' last two outings are any representation of how he's going to be. I mean, the thing that I like about Michael Fiers is he's only walked two people and struck out 17. That's crazy.
That's shades of Zach Greinke in that. You know, his strikeout to walk ratio is just astounding. And, you know, it's that kind of poise from such a young pitcher and a guy so new to the league that he's not afraid of anybody, you know? He doesn't pitch around people, and that gets him in trouble, and it's going to, but he's young, and you have to kind of give him a pass that way, mm-hmm. At least this year. I think if it's still happening, you know, come August, if he's still in the rotation, which I think he should be, and I think Estrada would be fine in the pen.
I was just going to ask you that, honestly, was on my last article I wrote, you know, saying about how, yes, Estrada's coming back, but Michael Fiers needs to stay in the rotation. Estrada is not a bad pitcher, but the way that our bullpen's been bleeding consistently, we need somebody in there, like Estrada, to hold the fort down. He was thought to go into this season as, you know, the guy who can pitch two innings in a game if needed, and pitch 3 days in a row to hold down the bullpen. You know, obviously, the fifth man spot was supposed to be to Narvison, but he's out. And the fifth man spot really doesn't have to be the ace of your rotation. It's just the guy that can go in there and get the job done, Michael Fiers. So that's why I don't want Estrada in the starting rotation, because he belongs in the bullpen, because he's good in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think it's not a knock on, it's not never a knock on a pitcher to say, like, oh, you can be the fifth guy, or you can be that kind of innings eater in the bullpen, where you can go, you know, two innings in middle relief, or three innings even in middle relief, you know what I mean? If someone has had a bad day, it's nice to have someone like that, and Estrada can be that guy, and I think taking Fiers out of the rotation is doing him a disservice. You don't expect a whole lot from your fifth guy. You expect him to go six. You want quality starts, obviously, from everyone. But, you know, we're not looking for a superstar, and especially if he's young, we're looking for someone to build that he can move up the rotation, say if we lose Markham, or, you know, God forbid we lose Greinke, and then he's getting to the point where he can be a number three guy.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the fifth man spot is when they come out of games, obviously the game's still going on, you know, say he gets six, seven innings, we don't expect them to have the lead, but we at least expect them to keep us in the game. Maybe two runs down, or maybe it's tied, or maybe we're actually one run ahead. That's what we expect from them. We don't expect perfection out of them, and there's no reason that they should give us perfection, because that's just impossible. They need to at least keep us in with reach of the game. And I think Fiers has actually kind of done that, you know, recently. You know, yeah, he has outings where, you know, we lost 5-2 against San Diego when he pitched, but is that really on Fiers, or is that on the lack of offense? Because you're facing Ross Ohlendorf. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I think that's been the problem, really, that we haven't given a good, honest look to, you know, because we have people like Aoki that are doing really well. We have Luke Roy, who's out now, but had done amazing, you know, and Braun and all those people. We have three or four guys on that team that can be just offensive powerhouses, but beyond those guys, we don't really have anybody. And in the positions they are in the lineup, they're not giving each other opportunities. And so I think, you know, average pitching can get you to the playoffs if you have a good offense. And what we have right now is, outside of maybe Greinke, we have average pitching. But we don't have an even average offense right now.
No, our offense has been so up and down, and more down than anything, because, like we just talked about earlier, I don't like that Reinicke is still tampering with the lineup. I don't like that at all. You know, Nori needs to be first. When Lukwa comes back, he needs to be second. We need to have Braun third, then Rami, then Hart. Then I think Weeks should be down farther, because when Weeks hits, he hits and people can score. When he's up in the lineup and gets out, that's an out with, you know, Luke Roy and Braun to follow, and there's no point in having that. You know, if he's going to get a hit or if he's going to get a sac fly, make sure there's somebody on base, on third, on second that can move over. So, I mean, that's why we need Weeks down on farther in the lineup. I'm not saying he can't hit, but he's been struggling a lot this year.
I'll say it. He can't hit this year.
Well, he can hit, but it's just been a huge struggle for him this year.
So then he's just choosing not to.
He's choosing not to. He's like, I don't want to hit. Why do I want to do that? It's too much work. But it's just, if he's going to get that hit, you want him when there's people on base.
Absolutely.
So I just don't like the fact that he's tampering with the lineup too much. It just doesn't bode well.
Right.
It really doesn't. And, you know, we're trying to figure out the pitching situation, which is actually getting a lot more productive than we all thought. It's just the matter of the hitting. It's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, nothing. Pitching never looks productive if there's not offensive production behind it.
Yeah, so that plays a lot into it. Really, is, you know, we can't just rely on Ryan Braun to get all of our runs. We can't rely on one person. That's ridiculous.
Right, and you know, we as fans, our job as fans is to keep moving the goalposts on the team. We have, you know, they get better at one thing, now they have to be better at two things, and now they have to be better at everything. And, I mean, that's just the case. And if you want to be a winner, that's kind of just how it goes. But, I think I'm okay with the pitching as it sits right now. I know they're not doing stellar, but they're not taking us out of games. I mean, even in the Royals game last night, yes, Frankie gives up a couple hits, and he gives up an earned run, but we were still definitely in that game, and then the offense just kind of flops in that ninth inning. We had men on base, and we had an opportunity, and, you know, a couple strikeouts later, and the game's over.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some teams that actually lead their divisions or are higher up in their divisions, like, I don't know. Pittsburgh. Who do they have that blows you away on the mound?
They don't, outside of Hanrahan, they don't really have anybody.
They have James McDonald. That's about it. So, mm-hmm. I mean,
and well, Burnett is pitching the way that the Yankees could only have hoped for lately. Which makes me laugh a lot, just because, I mean, how many people in New York had just written off Burnett forever? How many people in the country had just written Burnett off forever? And then his last couple starts have been just exactly what the Pirates needed.
Well, the thing about Burnett is he pitched, we knew he could pitch that well in New York because he pitched that well in Toronto. And then he goes to New York, and obviously he hit the pressure wall that he can't pitch, you know, completely mental. That's what it was. The Yankees get rid of him. He goes to a smaller market team like Pittsburgh that hasn't done anything in the past 20 years. Literally has not done anything in the past 20 years. He pitches like an ace.
Right. So there's a team that hasn't had a winning season in 20 years, and now they're leading a division.
Yeah, so, I mean, outside of McDonald and Burnett, they don't have much. Outside of Greinke and Markham, we don't have much. And I'll even throw Gallardo into the mix there. So, I mean, obviously, there are teams that have average pitching that are getting the job done. We're one of those teams. We just need the offense to get, you know, some life. So,
right.
Because we know, you know, Aramis Ramirez can step it up tremendously. He did with the Cubs. Why can't he do it with us? You know, like you said, I'd like to see more production out of Taylor Green as well, because he has done well, but then he'll just, like, flop.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to predict him. And, you know, the outfield, I think, is the best part of our team, because they can play well and they can hit well. So, there's really no, I guess, discrediting them, because they're about the only part of the offense that's any doing anything, really. We have Gomez, who can steal bases, obviously, because they put him in as a pinch runner. We have Brian Norrie, who have been doing well. And then we have Corey Hart, who's been doing okay, and then Nigel Morgan, who still needs to kind of figure it out. But they're a whole lot better than the infield.
Yeah, the infield is just complete disarray right now, in my opinion. And, I mean, that happens when you have injuries like this. You know, losing Gonzalez and losing losing Gamel was huge. I mean, there was a guy in Gamel that you could see a future of the team, you know? Mm-hmm. And suddenly he's gone for the year, and, I mean, that's a blow. And then that kind of veteran leadership and that veteran bat that you had in Gonzalez is gone. And, you know, it's really tough looking back if you know, think hypothetically, like you're looking at the end of this season. It's hard to really feel like the Brewers would fail as much as they have right now if there weren't any injuries.
Yeah, I mean, injuries hamper a season, but it's just, we've played past it. We've been winning games past it. You know, we have the potential, if we win this series, to go into second or, you know, third or second. So, I mean, mm-hmm. we've been doing it with guys we knew weren't even ready to even play yet. So that's pretty impressive in my mind. But, you know, Estrada isn't back yet. Lucroy's not back yet. Ishikawa's not back yet, who I actually thought really played a bigger role than any of us thought.
Yeah, I was very encouraged by the way that Ishikawa had played. He was really one of those guys that we weren't expecting much from, and then started to really step it up. And I like him on defense a lot. I'm kind of excited to have him back. I think if you get him and Lucroy back, you have another. You know, obviously, Lucroy getting back, I know, especially on staff, there are a lot of people that don't trust Lucroy's numbers, but I do. I've seen his improvement since he started with the team, since he was, you know, the sometimes catcher, when he was that backup catcher, and you watch his improvement over those couple seasons, and if you're not going to trust his numbers now, when are you going to trust that performance?
Yeah, and
you know what I mean?
He's only 25, so, I mean, that's production out of a catcher that's incredible. You know,
right.
And looking at Ishikawa, I mean, I wrote down in a previous article about in his past 10 games that he played before he got injured, he drove in 7 runs and he scored 5 runs himself. So, I mean, he was providing a lot of production outside of, you know, Lucroy and Braun. So, it'll be great to have him back in the lineup, I think. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, speaking of that, I wanted to touch on just basically about all-star totals.
Yeah.
Just because Lucroy is on the leaderboard. He's number 5 right now, which, I mean, makes sense. He's injured and whatever, but it's really shocking the people that are at some of the people that are leading. Vote getters around the league.
Yeah, I think the biggest one I'm looking at right now is National League shortstop.
Troy Tulowitzki.
How is it not Starlin Castro? I don't get
right.
it. This obviously, you know, we've always said it every year that this is a absolute, you know, popularity contest. But how do you not have Starlin Castro as your first shortstop? The production he's been putting forth this year. And the lack of production Troy Tulowitzki's been putting. I mean, he's even on the DL right now. I mean,
right.
It just baffles my mind how you don't have Starlin Castro there. Because yet again, shortstops aren't, you know, supposed to be these big power hitting guys. You know, these guys.
Yeah.
And Starlin Castro's hitting well over 300. So.
He's hitting well over 300. He's a tremendous defender. He's young and he's very much the face of a team in the Cubs that, you know, needs a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surprising to me that the Chicago fans aren't getting the vote out on him more.
And speaking also to Chicago as well, other side of town, is AL catcher. How is Przinski not leading? How is he fourth?
Right. There are a couple.
I don't understand that. Like, I voted last night. No, I admit I voted for Joe Mauer because he's also done very well. But, I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know how Przinski's fourth. That makes no sense to me. He's doing much better than Mike Napoli, much better than Matt Wieters. And he's 36, so I mean...
Right. That and, you know, another White Sox, Paul Konerko, too, in third.
Yeah.
I still love Prince, and I gave Prince a bulk of my votes for the All-Star game, just because... Whatever, it's Prince Fielder.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what you're getting with him. But Paul Konerko is out of his mind this year.
Yeah, he's kind of doing what Derek Jeter's been doing. And the fact that they're older players that are tearing up the ball.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, I love seeing J.J. Hardy third for shortstop voting. That's, that's cool to see. We had all kind of written him off, and he's, in the last... two seasons at least, he's done very well for the Orioles.
Yeah, because he was thrown around, you know, with Milwaukee, and then I think he went to Toronto. I'm not exactly sure where he went. I wasn't following the J.J. Hardy tracker, but but yeah, he's done surprisingly well with Baltimore. And the one thing I like to see, you know, behind him, you know, Astro Cabrera from the Indians, and then Aceves Escobar, another ex-Brewer. You know,
yeah.
These are guys that, you know, aren't the biggest names of players, but have still shown that they're not too bad of players. And
well, and Jubal Cabrera last year was
a monster. It's just
the picture of a gold glove and, you know, an excellent offensive addition to the Indians.
Yeah, and also with the Indians, I don't really get how Jason Kipnis is in fifth, because the way Jason Kipnis has played this year is just tremendous. He's probably on pace for a 30-30 club. I mean, he's stolen 15 bases. He has 40 RBIs, 10 home runs, and, you know, obviously Kinsler and Cano and Pedroia are going to be up above him, but it's surprising to see Robert Andino from the Orioles is above him. That's what surprises me, because Andino's batting .243 with 3 home runs and 17 RBIs, and he's more of an everywhere player. He plays second, he plays third, he plays short. He's not really just consistently second like Kipnis is. And I just like Jason Kipnis because he's one of these guys that he's not a huge name. You know, he's a younger player with, you know, a smaller team and does well. So how can you not like him?
Right. I think if, and I think just shifting slightly, I think if you're a Brewers fan, you know, it'd be nice, Lucroy getting into the All-Star game is, for the second year, shamefully impossible at this point.
Yeah, with a broken hand and everything.
Yeah. I mean, if he hadn't gotten that injury... To be honest, if he hadn't gotten that injury, with the catchers in the National League, I mean, you look at the people that are leading, Yadier Molina, who, by the way, Jonathan Lucroy, even being out, has better numbers than him. Buster Posey, again, Jonathan Lucroy has way better numbers than him. And Brian McCann, even, you know, injury notwithstanding, he had outperformed them the entire time. But that's really the thing where you see the... popularity contest really come into play. I mean, Yadier Molina's always been a good catcher. He's always going to be. And there's no reason why he doesn't deserve a spot in the All-Star game. But, you know, and Buster Posey... In my mind, Buster Posey's a good player, but in my mind, he's always going to be more hype than substance.
I can't really agree with you there, because, like the Brewers... Buster Posey is about it for their offense. I mean, they have Melky Cabrera, but that's really it. I mean, he comes through in a lot of situations, and he obviously didn't get, you know, his fair share of playing time last year with a broken ankle. But with the way the Giants have been offensively, it's just they need Posey, and I just think he's been living up to a lot more than he needs to be. But, I mean, that's just my opinion. So,
in my mind, I think he's... I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad catcher. He's at least offensively, he's what you'd look for in a catcher. But, I mean, you brought up that broken leg. I mean, he's not where he needs to be defensively. I mean, that broken leg should never have happened, because Buster Posey should never have put himself in that position. He didn't have the ball.
Yeah, that was a bad...
He didn't have the play, he put himself in the line of fire on a game-winning situation when he could have just tried to control the ball.
Yeah, that's something that he needs to learn, because he is a younger player, that you don't block the play as a catcher, especially when you don't even have the ball. So that's something he's going to have to learn. But talking about the popularity contest, you know... is National League second base. I don't know how, but why is Ricky Weeks ahead of Jose Altuve? Why is Jose Altuve fifth?
I'm going to be honest. I've filled up on one of my email accounts. I've filled out all 25 votes. I didn't vote Ricky Weeks once. Not a single time.
You can't.
No, it's impossible. There's no way someone who's not even hitting 200 as an everyday player should be on the leaderboard. It's impossible.
He's hitting well below 200 at that. I just...
Yeah.
You know, Ugla to me is like Adam Dunn 2.0. The thing... He hits well, but he also strikes out a lot. And he puts up good numbers with a low average. Brandon Phillips, you know, he's a good shortstop, second baseman, but he's just, he's kind of overshadowed by Joey Votto a lot, to where I don't think he gets enough credit. But at the same time, you look at what Brandon Phillips actually has, the numbers he puts up, and they're just not that impressive.
And I would say that for second base across the majors, really. I mean, the depth at second base, I mean, I would say it's a little bit better in the American League than it is in the National League. But overall, I mean, you're not looking at a position that's just chock full of elite players.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't get how you don't vote for Jose Altuve. That's one guy I endorse. I will say that right now, I endorse voting for Jose Altuve. The kid, he's only 22 years old, and he's absolutely crushing the ball. He's batting .325 as an everyday guy.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are actually doing that? You know, hitting over 300, playing every day, if you're not Josh Hamilton.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just crazy to see that out of him. But, I mean, other than that, you know, obviously Joey Votto is leading first. David Wright's leading third, you know, one of the best players in the game right now. And outfield, I think, is actually interesting. You have Matt Kemp in first, Carlos Beltran in second, and then Ryan Braun actually in third. And I'm honestly kind of surprised that Braun's third. I'm surprised he's actually not lower. And I'm not saying that because of, you know, his production or anything. I'm saying because of the way things happen in the offseason.
And
how a lot of people do not like Ryan Braun anymore. But I'm surprised he's actually third.
Well, and what's funny is I haven't seen a whole lot of the backlash for Ryan Braun that I thought we were going to see. I think many people are willing to take it at face value what happened with the arbitration process and what happened with his sample and everything like that. I think many people are willing to take it as they said. I mean, mostly you see, you know, Dodger fans were a little bitter about Matt Kemp not getting it, which is going to happen anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, was going to happen anyways, but... Matt Kemp rightly leading, and Ryan Braun. If you're a Brewers fan and you haven't put your votes in yet, or are looking to put in more votes, you're gonna have to give Ryan Braun the push, because Andre Ethier is climbing the ranks in outfielders, and with that new extension and the way he's been playing recently, Ryan Braun's starting spot is definitely in danger.
Regardless of whether or not you're a Brewers fan. The reason why the Brewers have been winning is because of Ryan Braun. And if you don't vote for him, that's just... I'm sorry, there's something wrong there. I mean, he's going above and beyond what he has to do to help this team win. And it's been very evident. So, I mean, he's obviously reaffirming his MVP title. So, please, vote for Ryan Braun.
Right.
So,
right. That Corey Hart's on the leaderboard for the outfield, too, although he's very near the bottom.
Yeah, he's like 12th.
Which, I mean, rightly so. You know, it'd be nice to see some kind of push for Aoki.
Yeah.
Just because the way he's been playing recently has been just really, really well. And, you know, a guy that I think a lot of fans didn't expect a whole lot from, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a whole lot of expectation league-wide for someone like Aoki, but, I mean, he's really been proving to be just an excellent pickup.
You know, and I'm looking at, you know, the outfield for the AL, and there's one name I do not see on there that really surprises me. Mark Trumbo.
Ah, yes.
How do you not vote for Mark Trumbo? I actually wrote him in and voted for him 25 times. I'm going to do the same with Aoki as well. I just... how did you not vote for Mark Trumbo? I mean, he had been helping carrying that offense even when Pujols wasn't doing anything. So it's just...
Yeah.
He's another young player that is doing... is playing like he has 6-7 years of veteran experience. So...
Oh, right. Absolutely. I mean, he's hitting well for power right now. He's doing fantastic in my mind. Everything that can be asked of someone like him. So it... especially on a team that desperately needs production like Anaheim does.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, he's been getting more than multi-hit games. He's been getting, you know, 3-hit games, you know, 6 RBIs sometimes in a game. It's just, it's crazy. You know, and I'm not really surprised about this at all because nobody thought it would happen, but do you think there's going to be a bit of a push for Bryce Harper at all?
I think you'll see it. I think you'll definitely see it. He's been playing really well. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And he's definitely... he's a guy that the league wants to do really well. And it's a guy that the media wants to do really well. So I think you'll definitely see it. Will he make the team? Probably not. But will he... will he put together, you know, a nice little campaign at the end of... towards the end of the voting? I think absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we don't get to know about the pitchers, but if there's one pitcher in my mind that deserves to be in there, if he continues up in his next 2 or 3 star time when he has before the All-Star game, is R.A. Dickey for the NL. How do you not start R.A. Dickey? I mean, the night after Johan Santana throws his no-hitter, he shuts out the Cardinals again.
Right.
So, it's just, he's, the last 3 games he's pitched in, he's allowed no runs. And we're talking, he's going deep right. into games, 7 innings plus.
Well, and pitchers to me are always, it's always a more fair assessment because the managers get to pick the pitchers. So it always seems to shake out a lot more fairly because they know who can really get the job done. I mean, if we were allowed to pick pitchers, it would be, in my mind, it would be a nightmare.
Oh,
if
the
fans
terrible.
If the fans pick pitchers. Mostly because it would be an entire roster full of starters, but
yeah, I mean you have like 2 closers, like oh that doesn't work, so I mean
right, and it'd be the same 2 guys for like 25 years.
Yeah, so. I mean you'd have guys because I mean let's face it, who would the NL put in? The NL would put in guys like Lincecum and guys like guys that just don't belong there because they're not doing well, and then you have guys like Madison Bumgarner and R.A. Dickey that are doing very well that. Obviously, should get there. You know, in the right. AL, obviously, Sabathia is probably going to get the All-Star game. I don't know if he'll get the start, but I mean, you have Matt Harrison on his heels and David Price. So, like I said before, I think the NL is more... I don't want to pick favorites here, but I think the NL is better at pitching. I just always have.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think the AL is better at offense. I mean... you have Josh Hamilton, who has 62 RBIs already.
Right.
He, I kid you not, he was, I think, projected this year for 162 RBIs.
Good Lord.
That is crazy. In 57 home runs. He already has 22. I mean...
that's unbelievable. The way Hamilton's been producing this year, I mean... in my mind, for AL MVP, you call off the race right now.
Yeah, it's just like, go home, everybody. Nice year. Come back in 2013.
Even if his numbers drop off remarkably after the All-Star break, he's still got it. Like, you just can't... the kind of production we're seeing from him is just... it's unbelievable, in my mind.
I mean, the only person that hasn't beaten anything is Canerica, who hasn't beaten batting average. That's it. I mean, nobody else comes close
right.
to him. So, it's just... though I am surprised to see that Adam Dunn's only actually 1 home run behind him. So,
oh, it's good for Adam Dunn. He definitely needs it.
Adam Dunn, what he'll do in a game, hit and strike out, and then strike out some more.
Right.
Like, oh my god, he actually broke the streak. Because he usually had like a streak of always striking out. He actually broke that streak on June 6th against Toronto. He did not strike out once. He went 0-for-3, but he didn't strike out.
And then, baby steps.
Of course, he strikes out 3 times in the game against Seattle, so...
right.
Yeah, it's going to be a good All-Star game, I think. But I think the one guy that I think is getting a little bit snubbed here is honestly Melky Cabrera.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, Carlos Beltran is doing well, but I don't know how you can't have Melky Cabrera up there. I mean, yet again, why the Giants are winning are because of Buster Posey and Melky Cabrera, and after Zada Madison, Bumgarner, and Matt Cain. But Cabrera's numbers are so much better than Carlos Beltran, and I just don't know how you don't have him starting. I mean, Carlos Beltran is he's a power hitter, but with most power hitters, you don't get a lot of contact. Melky Cabrera is just, like, getting 3 hits a game, and, I mean...
Right.
How can you not like that production?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that, again, is where that, that kind of popularity contest comes in. And, like, one guy who's not doing stellar, but, you know, I'd like to see climb the ranks a little bit is, Michael Bourne. I've been a fan of him for a couple years now. He was, in my mind, one of the people that held Houston together for the last couple of years. And then, I mean, has performed well with Atlanta in the last 2 seasons as well. So, I mean, again, he's not doing anything fantastic, but then again, hitting .317. I mean,
Atlanta themselves are just like, are not even the same team in general. The bullpen's bad. The offense is there, I guess.
Right.
But Michael Bourne has been a huge part of that, so...
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting to see Jason Hayward above him, considering Jason Hayward's hitting .245 this year to Bourne's .317 or whatever it was. With only 2 more home runs. So, in my mind, Bourne's a better player in the outfield right now.
Yeah, it's popularity contest, and it I hate seeing it, but it happens.
Yeah, and Andrew McCutchen being far below either of those two as well, considering...
He's 10th.
considering what he's doing for the Pirates. He was an all-star last year. I would hope that he would be a reserve pick. Just because you want to talk about giving the National League a chance, I mean, there's a guy that can do it. Because he's the guy that's giving the Pirates every chance he can.
He was the Pirates last year, let's face it. I mean, right. There's no doubting that. And like Braun, I mean, these are guys that obviously their WAR is going to be through the roof because that's how much the team depends on them. So McCutchen, in a sense, if he's not a starter, by God, he needs to be a reserve. And if he's not a reserve, then there's no justice in this game.
Right. So he only has 40,000 more votes than Corey Hart does.
that's saying something for a guy who can't play the corner, right? So.
Right. Exactly.
Wow.
You know, and I feel bad saying it. You know, saying it this way, like, but I mean, really. The Brewers, Greinke will be a pitcher in the All-Star game. I'm a firm believer of that.
Oh, he has to be.
And you're gonna have Ryan Braun, and then you're probably not gonna have any other Brewers in there. And you know, to some degree, that's a shame. But also, I mean, rightly so. The team's not performing at All-Star levels. I think if Luke Roy was healthy, he would definitely be the biggest snub of the All-Star game, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But with him gone, yeah, I mean, if we get 2 All-Stars this year, I mean, that's going to be a good year for the Brewers.
You want to know something that's a little bit messed up? Ricky Weeks is actually 28 votes from being, or 29 votes, I'm sorry, 29 votes out of being out of third place. What?
That's shocking. That's shocking. I mean, and I like Ricky. I want him to do well. I always want him to do well. I want all the Brewers to do well, but... I mean, he just doesn't deserve to be on that leaderboard this year. And there's no shame in saying that he's up there strictly on his name.
Yeah, and, you know, like, for first base, people keep voting for Lance Berkman. He's out.
Right.
Why are you voting for injured people? You're taking votes away from guys like Brian LaHare, who have done well, and Freddie Freeman.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are a lot of people that go on the idea that... your All-Star votes should be for the way they played in the last half of the season the last half of last season coming up to the first half of this season. It's a weird kind of mindset.
It's very weird.
It has logic in it. I mean, it does have logic in it, but at the same time, it doesn't, though, because in the dynamics of the last half of the season, you know, some people are going to get more rest and they're going to focus more on other things when their team's out of contention. I mean, you're definitely not playing for All-Star votes in September if you're 12 games back.
Yeah, and the fact that you have 3 to 4 months off and that any hot streak you're on is now gone.
You can't
base the second half of the season, like you said, especially going into August and September, especially, and if you're on a team that's not even close to the playoffs, you can't do that. You can't even do that on guys that are on teams that are going to the playoffs, because you have, like, a Josh Hamilton or a Robinson Cano or anybody like that.
Or all the Yankees, rather.
Or all the Yankees or anybody else. They're going to get rested. They're not going to play every day. So, I mean, you're going to have the backups play, especially in September when the rosters expand. You're going to have a lot of the younger players being played, you know, guys without the experience. So,
right.
You can't judge it on that. I don't agree with that mentality at all.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's right.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, there seems to be some kind of logic involved in that. And to me, that's the only reason guys like Berkman and, you know, well, all the Cardinals, for instance, are getting so much. But they also have a big fan base because they're in the middle of a country where, outside of Kansas City, there's very little baseball.
Well, not in the fact they just won a World Series, but...
Well, yeah.
But,
We don't ever have to bring that up.
No. Though I will make... It made for an entertaining World Series, though. Game 6 is just... Regardless of who won that, it was just, like, the best World Series game I think I've ever seen. I mean...
Yeah, it was impressive.
So... That's about all the credit we're going to give the Cardinals, so...
That's all we can legally give, I think.
Yeah. But, it's going to be interesting, this All-Star game. I think the pitching selection is going to be very interesting as well, because you have a lot of guys who you didn't expect to do well that are actually doing well. So...
Right. I can tell you right now, for sure, you're going to see... I mean, R.A. Dickey absolutely should be on the NL side. I think Bumgarner, Greinke, and Strasburg will probably have to make it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that ERA alone should give him a nod. But you know, and AL is going to be interesting to see who gets picked there.
Yeah, it's kind of like I don't want to say hit or miss, but it's just. There are guys that are a bit obvious who you need to take, and some guys who are just like, you take them, it's based on their name only, so...
Right.
Like, I have nothing against Ivan Nova at all.
Right.
But you have an 8-2 record, but...
And your ERA is hovering right around 5.
Yeah, I mean, you know, baseball saw that in 2010 with Phil Hughes. He was 18-4, but had an ERA of 4.01. That tells me... They have a good offense. That tells me nothing about the pitcher, other than the fact that they give up runs.
Yeah.
I mean,
Nova's average against is .290 right now. I mean, they're getting hits off him a lot of them.
Yeah, and you look at guys like Doug Fister, who before he went to Detroit when he pitched with Seattle, still he was 12-30 with an ERA of 3.87. That tells me his record should have been a lot better than it was.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot better. 12-30, come on.
Yeah, to me, one of my most surprising pitchers this year in the majors, hands down, Chris Capuano.
Yeah,
for the Dodgers, 2.87 ERA and 8-2, like
Clayton.
That's incredible.
Is it Clayton who?
Exactly.
Like, I mean,
which is funny to say, but I mean, you talk about a guy that's just anchoring a rotation, and there he is.
Yeah, I mean, and then you know the Dodgers have needed that for so long because they had, you know, they thought, well. Chad Billingsley will go into that role, and Chad Billingsley is Chad Billingsley and does not do well all the time. And then Ted Lilly got hurt. The guy they brought up, Nate Evelotti, who actually started against Michael Fiers, has actually not done too bad at all. He's 0-2, but he has a 1.93 ERA, and he's been lasting pretty long in the games. Every game he's been in, the Dodgers have lost, but I don't blame him really for his losses. He's given up 2 runs or less. So those obviously are things the Dodgers can come back from because they've been playing really good ball. But
no, I mean, to your point, they're up and down the National League. They are just excellent pitchers. You have Strasburg and Gonzalez in Washington, who are doing just fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, the Giants pitching is
with Kane and Bumgarner. It's just
I mean, it's hard. It's almost to the fact of which really good pitcher gets left out of that game.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell because you have a lot of guys who have records that'll fool you. Like Brandon Beachy. He's 5-4 but has an ERA below 2.
Right.
You know, Ryan Dempster, 2-3, has an ERA of 2.31. Then you get guys like, you know, your Strasburgs and your Matt Cains. And I think the one guy that surprises me more than anything is Johnny Cueto.
Yeah.
Who would expect him to go 7-3 this year? I mean, with a decent ERA, he is a guy who has historically not done all that well. I mean, he's kind of been in that rotation with, you know, Homer Bailey and Bronson Arroyo. And it's just, the Reds have always just been kind of there. Nothing really fantastic about them outside of Joey Votto and Jay Bruce and Brandon Phillips. But yeah. The fact that a Cincinnati pitcher is doing that well, that's crazy. And then you have Wade Miley from Arizona, who's 7-2 with a 2.53 ERA. And it's just, the National League is just so much more closer than the AL is. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, and well, even look at, you know, and that's what kind of makes me sad about a lot of Milwaukee's pitchers. I mean, well, specifically Gallardo and Markham, who are pitching well, I think. I think they're doing a very good job, but you know, so many bad breaks here and there that have just ruined those two seasons thus far.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. It's just
yeah, because I mean, Gallardo is still he's in the top 15 of strikeout, you know, strikeout counts. He's got a decent enough whip. Just bad breaks, it seems like, when he gets out there.
Well, the thing is, you know, you take away his two starts from the Cardinals, and he looks like a god. I mean, that's how well he has done, other than playing the Cardinals. He is pretty much lights out. I mean, he has struggled at times, but you can easily come back from that. And the one thing I want to make note of is the first 18 pitchers of the NL that, you know, you look at them ranked, all have an ERA below 3. That you only have right. 7 pitchers in the AL who have an ERA below 3. That's crazy. I mean,
the AL definitely gets more publicity having, you know, well, because of the AL East mainly. But you know, I think the NL is the better league all around this year.
Oh, no doubt in my mind. It's just you take out Paul Konerko and Josh Hamilton. And the AL really has nothing this year. Nothing that just brought you back. I mean, the NL has the pitching, the NL has the hitting. It's just, I can't see how they don't win the All-Star game, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
I mean, you have 18 pitchers who have an ERA below 3. And these are starters we're talking about, not relief guys. These are starters.
Right.
You know, you look at some of the names in there, you know, Kyle Lowe surprises me. Chris Capuano came out of nowhere. Johnny Cueto, obviously. And then you have guys who are, you know, on that edge, like Edwin Jackson and Madison Bumgarner. And the one pitcher I think that completely surprises me this year that isn't Tim Lincecum is Cliff Lee. Doesn't he have a win yet? He started...
That is surprising.
In 10 games, Cliff Lee is 0-3. And it's just, Philly has just fallen apart.
Yeah, well, you know, they put a lot of money into that team. They banked on, a lot of older guys as opposed to, you know, building a farm system. And it's kind of just what happens, you know, when you, I don't want to say sell your soul, because there's nothing wrong with picking up, you know, really good opportunities when you have the money available, but I mean, yeah, when you go to free agency and you work in trades rather than working on a farm system, greatness is fleeting a lot more than not.
It's kind of like they try to do what the Yankees have done for the past 40 years, but
right.
in a much worse way. Because they do it and everybody falls apart. You know, Halliday's out, Utley's still out, Howard's still out. And even when they come back, when's the next time Utley's going to go in the DL? That's kind of the guessing game here, because every time Utley comes back, he plays for 2 weeks and is injured again. So it's kind of like Russian roulette with the Phillies, seeing, okay, who's going to get hurt next? Which star? Because they've had injuries with Placido, Polanco before. And the thing with Halliday is just a huge scare because of how much money they've invested into him. You know, and Howard, yeah. obviously, as well. So, I mean, you know, they lost Raul Ibanez. You know, they lost Jason Worth. They have Shane Victorino still in the outfield. And they still have Jimmy Rollins and Carlos Ruiz. But that's really about it. And they put a lot of money into getting Papelbon, so...
Yeah.
I don't see Philly, honestly, getting anywhere near the top three in the NL East this year. I don't.
No, anything that they try to do now, I think, is going to be too little too late for them.
Yeah, because with the way the Nationals have been playing, and even the Braves and the Mets, they you just can't catch up to them. Not in the momentum they're on. So.
So do you want to do... Players, pitchers of the week?
Yeah, why not? Let's get down to it, and probably into our last topic, because we've been talking for, like, a while now. So,
we're very heated about the All-Star game.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it's going to be a good one, and, you know, it's always this time of year when you talk about the snubs and everything, so you want to get started with the players, pitchers, and batters of the week?
Yeah, I'm going to say for offensive player of the week, have to go with Aoki on this mm-hmm. one. Last seven games, three doubles, two home runs, including the walk-off. Well, both home runs came on the Thursday game against the Cubs, including the 10th inning walk-off. Only two strikeouts in 23 at-bats, and he's hitting, like, .391. He's it right now.
Yeah, I had to agree with you there. It's just, the way Aoki has played, it's just, you know, offensively, defensively, there are just so many good things about him, and... It was really, you know, like you said, a disservice to not play him earlier in the season because Renicki didn't know what he was like. But now that we know
right.
what he can do, it's just... It's stupid if you don't play him. I mean, it's flat-out stupid
right.
if you do not play Nori every day. So, I mean,
yeah.
it doesn't matter if Nigel Morgan gets on for the rest of the season. There's no benching Nori. There's no way you can do that.
No. And I do want to say... Martin Maldonado, you are second by that much.
Yes.
I mean, he was just out of his mind the last couple games. I mean, fell off, didn't have a hit against the Royals, but I mean, everything we could ask for in a young guy just stepping it up.
You know, and he's, you know, gotten seven RBIs in his past four games. I mean,
yeah,
that's incredible to get that out of anybody. But especially a guy who wasn't even ready to be up here to begin with and has just been throwing into this mix. So, I mean, in that time, he's had to learn everybody but Wolf. That's incredible.
Right.
So, you know...
Especially for, again, a guy who's, you know, 25 years old and really this is all the major league experience he's had thus far.
Yeah, and, you know, Maldonado has just, you know, so far gone a little bit above what we expected. But, I mean... There's no way you play guitars, you know, every day, because A, he's the backup guy anyway, and B, I think he's still injured a little bit. But, I mean,
He's dropped off remarkably from the start he had earlier in the year. I mean, I still like guitarists, but he's barely showed up for the last couple of weeks.
You know, and when Estrada comes back and when Luque comes back, you don't get rid of Fires and you don't get rid of Maldonado. Those are two guys I think we have to keep going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Speaking of Fires, who's your pick for pitcher of the week?
Well, like we said, you know, a while ago, Zach Greinke is still it until further notice. And, I mean, there just really there really is no reason why he can't be. You know, aside from his bad outing against Arizona, his past 10 games, going all the way back to April 23rd, he has literally given up 3 runs or less, and he only gave up 3 runs once. He goes long into games, he strikes out a lot of people. And, you know, that's something we've been seeing from Michael Fiers, who I kind of have a second. He didn't miss it by anything, you know, he didn't miss first by, you know, a hair. He's well, past, you know, below first, but...
Right.
There's just no way Greinke doesn't get it week in, week out until he explodes.
Well, yeah.
But, I mean, the way...
I will say, though, I give votes to Gallardo, because of his last start. 1.2 ERA and change in his last start. Just a really solid outing. I mean, nothing compared to, you know, Greinke's 20 strikeouts and 14 innings. But,
yeah.
It's good to see Gallardo again, like we just said, quietly just doing what he needs to get done and being that guy we need at the top of the rotation.
Yeah, you know, if I had to rank our pitchers right now, I'd probably go Greinke, Gallardo, and maybe Fiers. Because, like I said before, you can't judge him on three starts. And even then,
right.
Those are starts, you know, the last two games, he did give up four runs, but, I mean, those are games we could have easily come back and won, especially game against Pittsburgh. We lost 6-5.
You see where his pitches are at now, just physically, and you see the way that he works through a game, and it's hard not to feel really good about Fiers, even if he gets stuck with a loss or two.
Yeah, because his strikeout-to-walk ratio is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, that's shades of Zach Greinke we're seeing. And that's very apparent as of right now. You know, yeah, it's nice to strike out players, but if he can get out, if he can kind of absorb what Markham does and getting outs as well, this kid's going to be, you know, in the rotation next year, you know, coming out of spring training. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Which, by the way, how amazing has Markham's transition into being a strikeout specialist been in the last couple of weeks?
Like, is this the same Sean Markham we're talking about?
Right.
I mean, he strikes out 9, then 8, then 6. I'm like,
and he's mixing elevation in a way that he hasn't done, I think, in his entire career. You know, getting batters, you know, looking low and then firing high, and, you know, I mean, really, he used to be a guy that, you know, you're looking at bottom third of the strike zone for the entire game.
Yeah. So, I mean, in his last outing against San Diego, he got 14 fly balls as outs.
Right.
I mean, or not, and they might not have just been out, but I mean, he got players to hit the ball that high. So, I mean, he's elevating his pitches, you know. He's making the batters, you know, look up more and swing up higher, which, you know, they do that. Sometimes it can be the long ball, but sometimes, you know, it can be a pop-up to second. So,
right.
It's been good what Markham can do. I've liked seeing, you know, the consistency from him, you know, elevating his pitches, you know, going down in the zone, going up in the zone. You know,
and with command everywhere,
yeah,
too.
Because that tremendously throws off batters, because, you know, when you can't have a consistent eye level as a batter, you're toast. I mean, there's no other way to say that.
Yeah, you saw it with Kataris in his at-bat yesterday, too. I mean, how changing elevations can really, really mess with a batter's head.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is what a lot of people don't realize is, you say, oh, well, this pitcher gave up, you know, three runs or four runs in two innings or whatever. Well, a lot of that's also in the catcher. The catcher, you know, tells them, okay, do you want to throw this pitch? You know, they'll signal, you know, one for the fastball, two for the second pitch, and then shows them elevations and tries to bring their glove down or up. So, I mean, I'm not blaming catchers for that, but you can't blame pitchers entirely if they give up, you know, a few hits.
Right. You play each batting order or each at-bat individually, and, you know, sometimes they get it right, sometimes they don't.
You know, and, I mean, I think that's the thing I like about Luke Roy, is he works well with all of our pitchers, but, I mean, his ERA is a little bit higher with pitchers than I would like it to be, though, so.
Yeah, yeah, but he's also, I mean, he's one of the guys that consistently calls his own game the entire way, and that's pretty rare to see these days. And he's also one of the best at framing pitches. I think.
I,
in terms of getting his glove in position, you know.
I can agree with that. He does a fairly good job of that. And, you know, going forward, when he does come back, you know, it's just going to help us even more. Just not the fact that he's going to be back in the lineup, but the fact that he's going to help our pitchers, you know, get back to where they need to be. And, you know, they've done pretty well in his absence, though. That's the thing. I'm not saying, you know, oh, we don't need, you know, Luke Roy, we have no use for him. I mean, They've done fairly well without him, and if they can get back on track with him, it's going to be lights out.
Absolutely.
So, well, I think we've talked for for our fair share today. So,
absolutely.
Thank you for listening, and as always, tune in for next week.
We'll see you later.